Ever felt completely stuck? Like maybe you're trying to get a new side project off the ground, but you just hit a wall. Funding's maybe tight. Time feels even tighter. And that little voice of self-doubt starts whispering, it's impossible. How often do we get caught just replaying the problem over and over instead of, actually seeing a way forward?
Well, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going to try and flip that script. Our mission here is to give you some really powerful strategies to move from that feeling of why me to a much more proactive, okay, what can I actually do? We want to help you transform challenges into, well, genuine opportunities and really become a proactive solution creator. And this isn't just for like huge business dilemmas. It's about tool you can use every single day. Whether you're facing a scary work deadline or trying to figure out a personal challenge, we've spent time digging into a bunch of really insightful sources for this deep dive. Things like Calm First, The Path to Creative Solutions, Creative Thinking Made Simple, Nature's Wisdom for Life's Challenges, and also the power of collaborative problem solving.
Yeah, and what's really fascinating is the common thread that runs through all of them. It's this idea that problem solving isn't some, rare talent only a few people have. It's actually a mindset. It's a way of living almost. And it's a skill that's accessible to, well, pretty much everyone. It's just waiting there to be developed.
Okay, so let's unpack that. Where do we start? I think the first crucial step before we can solve anything really is mastering what goes on inside, right? The inner game. Think back to that side project example hitting a wall, or maybe an unexpected bill lands on your doorstep, or even just getting into a heated argument. Our bodies, they instinctively kick into that old fight or flight mode. Your heart starts racing, your breath gets shallow, and you get that surge of stress hormones, adrenaline,
Right,
cortisol.
a classic stress response. And while it was great for, escaping predators way back when, it's pretty disastrous for clear thinking now. It literally shuts down the parts of your brain you need most. Logic, creativity, problem-solving skills. They just go offline. That source you mentioned, Calm First, it really nails it. You can't solve effectively when you're panicking.
Simple but powerful.
It's a clear call to action, really. Calm first, then solve later. And it's not just about feeling better. Studies actually show chronic stress can shrink gray matter in your prefrontal cortex. That's the bit you need for complex problem solving.
Wow. So calming down isn't just a nice to have, it's like essential brain maintenance.
Precisely. But the good news is you don't need like hours of meditation to make a difference. There are simple techniques that can restore balance pretty quickly. Take the 4-7-8 breath, for instance. You just inhale through your nose quietly for 4 seconds, hold your breath for 7, and then exhale slowly through your mouth for 8. Doing that actually triggers your parasympathetic nervous system. That's your body's natural rest and digest system. It calms things down.
I've tried that one, and it is surprisingly effective. What's a common mistake people make when they first try these quick calming things? Do they expect like instant nirvana or something?
That's a great question. Often, yeah, people expect it to be like flipping a switch,
Yeah.
instant calm, but it's really more like slowly turning down a dimmer switch. The goal isn't necessarily immediate total peace, but more about reducing the intensity of that stress response. And consistency is key. The more you practice, the better they work.
Makes sense, like building a muscle.
Exactly. Another really solid one is box breathing Navy SEALs. Apparently use it. It's simple. Inhale for 4, hold for 4, exhale for 4, hold for 4. Just keep that square pattern going. Or if your thoughts are just racing and spiraling, the 5-4-3-2-1 grounding method is fantastic. You just intentionally notice 5 things you can see right now, 4 things you can physically touch, 3 things you can hear.
2 you can smell, and 1 you can taste.
Right.
It pulls you right back into the present moment, away from the worry spiral.
It really does. And sometimes, honestly, the simplest thing is what you mentioned, the power of the pause.
Yeah, just giving yourself permission not to react immediately. Maybe step away, grab a glass of water, take a short walk, or even just say, you know what, let me think about that for a bit and I'll get back to you. It can completely change how you handle things.
It's amazing how often solutions seem to pop up when you least expect them, isn't it? Like when you're in the shower or out for a walk or just drifting off to sleep.
Totally. It's not a coincidence, is it?
Not at all. That state of relaxation or stillness allows your subconscious mind to get to work. It starts processing information and making connections that your stressed, focused brain just can't see. Think about Einstein daydreaming about riding a beam of light that led to relativity. Or Nikola Tesla, his big ideas often came when he was alone, in solitude.
So that quiet mind, it's not empty.
Far from it. It's actually the birthplace of solutions.
Okay, so that inner quiet isn't just about feeling peaceful. It's actually creating the space for the next big step, which is reframing, right?
choosing how we look at the problem itself, shifting our lens.
Yes, exactly. And it's really striking how much our perspective shapes our reality. You can have two people facing the exact same situation, let's say losing a job. One person might see it as the absolute end of the world, total devastation. The other might see it as, well, maybe a necessary push towards something new, a chance to reinvent themselves.
The event is the same, but the interpretation is completely different.
Precisely. Problems themselves are kind of neutral. They're just events. It's how we interpret them that makes them feel heavy or light, impossible or manageable. And when we consciously shift from seeing problems as just roadblocks to maybe viewing them as opportunities or teachers or even just puzzles, it unlocks a whole different kind of energy and creativity.
And there's brain science behind this too, isn't there? Like, focusing on the negative actually triggers the fear center.
Absolutely. Cognitive psychology studies show that when you focus on the negative aspects of a problem, you activate your amygdala, the brain's fear hub. This releases cortisol, and it literally narrows your focus, makes you less open to new ideas. But when you actively reframe, when you ask different questions about the problem, you engage your prefrontal cortex, specifically the dorsolateral part. That's your brain's executive control center.
The problem-solving part.
Exactly. It allows for more flexible thinking, optimism, curiosity, making those novel connections we need. So instead of thinking this project is just impossible, you might consciously ask yourself, okay, what's one small thing I can try today?
That simple shift in language moves you from feeling helpless to feeling proactive.
And history is full of people who mastered this. You mentioned Thomas Edison earlier. He didn't see thousands of failures in finding a light bulb filament.
Right. He said, I have not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work. He reframed failure as data collection.
That's incredible reframing. Or Nelson Mandela, reframing 27 years in prison, not as lost time, but as preparation for leadership. His famous quote, I never lose, I either win or learn.
Wow. So for that side project that feels overwhelming, instead of getting stuck on, this isn't working, you could ask, okay, what is this situation showing me? What new direction could I explore? Or even just, you know, the everyday stuff, you're stuck in a traffic jam. Instead of fuming, how could you reframe that? Is it maybe 10 minutes of unexpected time for a podcast, or just some quiet breathing, or maybe calling someone you haven't spoken to in a while?
That's the core idea. Keep asking yourself, what else could this situation mean? Is there a lesson here, a redirection, an opportunity I wasn't seeing before?
Mm-hmm.
Each time you reframe like that, solutions that were hidden in plain sight often start to, well, emerge.
Okay, so our minds are calmer. We've shifted our perspective. Now it feels like we're ready for the really fun part, actually unleashing our ingenuity. Because let's be honest, creativity isn't just for artists, right?
Hmm.
We tend to put it in this box of painting or writing music.
But it's so much broader than that. At its core, creativity is simply the ability to see things differently or to connect things in new ways.
Yeah. Every time you figure out a new shortcut driving home, or you whip up a meal from leftovers, or you manage to fix something broken with whatever you have lying around, that's creativity in action. You're flexing that muscle.
Exactly right. And it is like a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets. You don't need to be born creative to think outside the box. It's really about cultivating resourcefulness.
So let's talk practical techniques. Brainstorming, what are some good ground rules? I always hear quantity over quality at first.
Yes, that's key initially. Don't censor yourself. Get all the ideas out, even the really silly or outlandish ones. Sometimes the craziest idea sparks a genuinely useful one in someone else, or even in your own mind later.
I like the 10 ideas challenge for that reason. You force yourself to come up with 10 possible solutions, no matter how wild. Often, the best ones don't show up until you get past the obvious stuff, maybe around idea number 7 or 8.
That pressure can be really productive. And another crucial brainstorming principle is the yes and approach, borrowed from improv comedy.
Ah, instead of shooting ideas down immediately.
Exactly. Instead of no but, you respond with yes and. You build upon the previous idea, even if it seems flawed. It keeps the positive momentum going. You mentioned a team example earlier, the printer idea. That's perfect yes and thinking. The joke, teach the printer to say no, wasn't shot down, it was built upon, leading to a practical solution. Defaulting to double-sided printing. Cut paper use in half.
Brilliant. Okay, what about visual tools? I hear a lot about mind mapping.
Mind mapping is fantastic. It's a visual way to organize thoughts and, crucially, unlock connections your linear thinking might miss. You just put your central problem, let's stick with finding clients for the side project, in the middle of a page. Then you draw branches radiating outwards for main categories. Maybe marketing strategies, potential obstacles, target audiences, networking ideas.
And then you branch off those.
Yep. Keep adding sub-branches with more specific ideas for each category. It helps you see the whole picture and often reveals unexpected links or themes. Like you might suddenly see how a networking idea connects to overcoming a specific obstacle.
Okay, too. And then there's something called lateral thinking. That sounds a bit more abstract.
It is, but it's powerful. It comes from Edward de Bono. Lateral thinking is basically about escaping your usual logical thought patterns and approaching the problem from completely unexpected angles, finding solutions that aren't obvious.
How do you do that, though?
Well, one technique is random word association. You literally pick a random word from a book or dictionary, say, the word is cloud. Then you force yourself to make connections between cloud and your problem.
So side project clients plus cloud? What would that even mean?
Maybe it sparks ideas about cloud-based marketing tools or reaching a distributed audience. Or perhaps the silver lining aspects lead you to reframe a perceived weakness. It forces unconventional connections.
Interesting. Like a creative jolt.
Exactly. Another one is reverse thinking. You ask yourself, how could I deliberately make this problem worse? So for the side project, how could I guarantee I get no clients?
Okay. I could ignore marketing, make the product unusable, have terrible customer service.
Right. List all those ways to fail. Then you flip each one. Ignore marketing becomes develop a strong marketing plan. Make the product unusable becomes focus intensely on user experience. The solutions are often hidden in the reverse of the problem.
That's clever. It feels like these are all ways to just train your brain to think differently.
That's precisely it. And you can train it in other ways, too. Simply changing your environment can spark creativity work in a different room, go for a walk, rearrange your desk. Novelty helps.
Mix up your inputs, too, right? Read something completely outside your field.
Yes. Read different things. Watch a random documentary. Talk to people with totally different backgrounds and perspectives. It builds new neural pathways. And practice divergent thinking. Instead of asking, what's the one right answer? Ask, what are all the possible answers?
Like that dinner example. You only have 3 ingredients left. Instead of saying, I can't make anything, ask what 5 different dishes could I invent with just these?
Perfect example.
Yeah.
So what this all boils down to is that creativity isn't some mystical artistic gift. It's resourcefulness. And these techniques are ways to train your brain to see potential solutions absolutely everywhere.
That's a really empowering way to think about it. Okay, so we've calmed our minds, shifted perspective, got the creative juices flowing. Now it's time to get practical, right? Dealing with those big, messy problems. This next part is key. The practical approach, breaking it down and building it up. Because huge problems, like getting that side project truly off the ground, can feel just insurmountable, like staring up at a giant mountain.
And nobody climbs a mountain in a single leap, do they?
Exactly. You have to break it down.
And when you do break a big, overwhelming problem into smaller, more manageable chunks, it immediately feels less intimidating. It's not one giant scary thing anymore. It becomes a series of smaller, achievable steps. And tackling each one not only reduces that feeling of anxiety, but also builds momentum. Each small win gives you confidence for the next step.
Okay, so how do we break things down effectively? Are there specific methods?
Definitely. One really classic and effective method is the 5 whys, which originally came from Toyota's manufacturing process, but works for almost anything. You just keep asking why, repeatedly, usually about 5 times, to drill down past the surface symptoms and find the actual root cause.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Let's take my side project isn't making any progress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why? Well, I keep procrastinating on the key tasks. Why? Because honestly, I don't really know where to start. Why? Because the whole vision feels too big and overwhelming. Why? Because I haven't actually broken it down into clear, small, actionable tasks.
Ah, so the root cause isn't laziness. It's lack of a clear, broken down plan. The solution isn't just stop procrastinating. It's create a detailed task list.
Precisely. You get to the real issue. Another great tool, especially for more complex problems, is root cause analysis, often visualized with something called a fishbone diagram or Ishikawa diagram. This helps you sort potential causes into different categories.
Mm.
Common ones are like people, process, technology, environment, materials. For your side project, maybe initial engagement is low.
Okay.
Using a fishbone, you could brainstorm causes under marketing, maybe the wrong channels, product, maybe a missing feature, audience, maybe misjudged needs, tools, maybe inefficient software. It helps you see all the contributing factors systematically.
So you're not just randomly guessing what's wrong.
Right. It structures your thinking. And these methods aren't just for business. Think about personal goals. Feeling overwhelmed by debt. Instead of, I'll never get out, break it down. 1, track spending for a month. 2, identify cuts.
Right.
3, create a repayment schedule. 4, set up automatic payments. 5, explore ways to increase income. C, smaller steps.
Or getting healthy. It's too vague. It becomes 1, drink 1 extra glass of water daily. 2, walk 20 minutes 3 times this week. 3, add 1 vegetable to dinner each night. 4, swap sugary soda for water. Much more doable.
Exactly. Now, here's where it gets really interesting, I think. We often have this hidden belief that our first attempt at a solution has to be perfect.
Oh, yeah. Perfectionism, the ultimate progress killer.
Totally paralyzing.
Oh.
But the sources we looked at really emphasize this. Solutions are usually drafts, not finished products. The goal isn't immediate perfection. It's progress. It's learning.
So it's okay if the first try isn't quite right.
More than okay, it's expected. That's where the value of experimentation and iteration comes in. Experimentation is simply trying something out, putting a potential solution into action on a small scale. Iteration is then looking at what happened, what worked, what didn't, and adjusting your approach based on those results. It's a cycle.
Start small, see what happens, tweak it, try again.
Exactly. Maybe even keep a simple solution journal. Jot down. Problem, idea tried, what happened, what I learned, next step. It helps you track your experiments and see the progress.
You think about famous inventors. James Dyson, didn't he make thousands of vacuum prototypes?
Over 5,000 prototypes for the bagless vacuum.
Yeah.
Each one wasn't a failure in his eyes. It was data. It was learning. It was an iteration getting him closer.
Same with Edison and the light bulb filament. Right. All those materials that didn't work were just steps on the path.
Absolutely. His failures were crucial parts of the process. And this applies to everyday life, too. Trying to eat healthier. You might try one meal plan, find it too restrictive, observe, swap some meals, adjust, try adding a new healthy recipe each week, iterate. You gradually build a sustainable routine.
For the side project, maybe you launch a very basic version, a minimum viable product, or MVP. Get feedback from early users, see what they like and don't like, and then iterate, adding features or refining based on that real-world data.
That's the heart of it. Real progress comes from taking action, reflecting on the results, and adjusting your course.
Yeah.
Not from waiting around for the perfect, flawless idea to strike. Every small iteration, every small experiment moves you closer.
Okay, this is great. We're getting really practical. Now let's zoom out a bit and take a more holistic view. I love this next idea. Looking to nature for wisdom.
Yes. The holistic view, nature's wisdom and collaborative power. Nature is, arguably, the greatest problem solver there is. It's had billions of years of R&D, constantly adapting and building resilient.
It's kind of humbling when you think about it that way. What specific lessons can we take?
Well, think about biomimicry engineers. Literally study nature to solve human problems. The high-speed bullet train nose, designed like a kingfisher's beak to reduce noise. Ventilation systems in buildings inspired by termite mounds. Nature has already solved so many complex problems.
So we should pay more attention.
Definitely. Consider plants. A tree encounters a rock underground. Does it just stop growing? No. Its roots find a way around the obstacle, seeking out nutrients and water elsewhere. Or the lotus flower, rising clean and beautiful from muddy water.
So setbacks aren't necessarily stop signs.
Nature teaches us they're often invitations to grow stronger in a new direction, to adapt. If your side project hits a financial rock, maybe you don't give up. Maybe you grow around it, find a different funding path, launch a smaller version first, pivot slightly.
Like finding a new patch of sunlight.
Exactly. Or think about animals, the incredible collaboration of honeybees or ants. The way wolves or dolphins work together for survival. They show us the power of group support. And entire ecosystems, like forests or coral reefs, demonstrate balance. Problems in nature are rarely solved in total isolation. True, sustainable solutions require harmony and interconnectedness.
So how do we apply these principles? If I'm feeling stuck in my career.
Think like that tree. Where can you put down new roots? What new skills, nutrients can you seek out? Explore adjacent paths if life feels chaotic and overwhelming.
Learn from the ocean tides. Step back. Allow for rest. Trust the natural rhythm.
Yes. Or if you're facing conflict, maybe learn from the collaborative bees. How can better communication and shared goals help? The core idea is that solutions are often grown or evolved, not forced. When in doubt, looking to nature's patterns can offer surprising insights.
That connection to ecosystems and collaboration brings up a really important question, doesn't it? Why do we so often try to tackle our problems completely alone?
It's a common tendency, isn't it? Maybe pride, maybe fear of burdening others, maybe just habit. But our individual perspective is always limited. We all have blind spots.
Other people see angles we miss. They can challenge our assumptions, point out flaws in our logic we didn't notice.
And they bring different strengths, different experiences, different knowledge to the table. Neuroscience backs this up too. Group brainstorming literally activates more diverse areas of the brain than solo thinking, leading to more creative potential.
You mentioned NASA earlier. The space pen wasn't one person's genius idea.
No, it emerged from collaborative efforts across different teams wrestling with the problem of writing in zero gravity. That synergy is powerful.
Okay, so collaborating is key. But how do we make that collaboration effective? It's not just about throwing people in a room, right? Asking the right questions seems crucial.
Absolutely critical. The quality of the answers you get, the solutions you generate together, depends massively on the quality of the questions you ask. We need to move beyond simple, closed, yes-no questions. So for your side project, instead of asking someone, do you think this marketing idea will work? Which invites a simple yes or no.
Try something more open-ended, like...
what do you think are the biggest strengths of this marketing idea? And then follow up with, what potential challenges or weaknesses do you see that I might be missing? Or how could we make this idea even stronger?
So you're inviting constructive input, not just validation.
Exactly. Instead of, do you like my business plan? Try looking at this plan. What potential roadblocks jump out at you? Or use the what if formula to spark imagination. What if we pretended we had unlimited time for this launch? What would we do differently? What if we had zero budget? How could we still achieve X?
It opens up the thinking so much more.
It really does. And this leads to the idea of consciously building your solution network. Think of the people around you as a kind of personal advisory board or a toolbox of diverse strengths.
So not just surrounding yourself with people who agree with you.
Definitely not. You need diversity. You might want the encourager, someone who lifts you up and believes in you, but also the challenger, someone who asks the tough questions and holds you accountable.
Okay. What else?
Maybe the expert, someone with specific technical knowledge you lack. The innovator, that person who always has fresh, slightly out there ideas. And the connector, the one who seems to know everyone and can link you up with resources or other helpful people.
So for that side project, I wouldn't just talk to my supportive best friend. I might also seek out someone who's run a similar business expert, brainstorm with my most creative colleague, innovator, and ask my well-networked uncle if he knows potential partners, connector.
That's the idea. Building a diverse support system turns those individual struggles into a collective strength. Often the most robust, resilient solutions emerge, not from going it alone, but from that connection and collaboration.
Okay, wow, we've covered so much ground. We started with calming that inner storm, then shifting our perspective, unleashing creativity, breaking down problems practically, drawing wisdom from nature, and now embracing collaboration. How do we pull all of this together? How do we make this a way of life, not just a set of techniques we use occasionally? That's the final piece, right? The solution mindset, making it a lifestyle.
Exactly. This is about fundamentally shifting your default response to challenges. For many of us, the automatic reaction is often complaining, worrying, or maybe blaming external factors or other people.
Which just keeps you stuck in the problem, right? It doesn't move you forward.
Precisely. It drains your energy and closes down possibilities. A solution mindset, on the other hand, is inherently proactive. It trains you almost automatically to focus on what you can influence, what you can do, rather than getting bogged down by what's out of your control.
So it starts with that simple, empowering question. Okay, what's one small action I can take right now to improve this situation, even just a tiny bit?
Yes. That question shifts you instantly from passive victim to active agent. So instead of thinking this side project is just impossible, the solution mindset prompts you to ask, okay, which part of this feels most doable right now? Let me tackle that first. Or, who could I reach out to for advice or help on this specific sticking point?
How do we embed this so it becomes more automatic? Are there daily practices?
There are several simple things you can weave into your routine. For example, try some morning intention setting. Before the day gets crazy, take 2 minutes to think about one challenge you anticipate facing and consciously decide how you want to approach it, maybe with calm or creativity or by breaking it down. It primes your brain.
It's like setting your compass for the day.
Kind of, yeah. Then maybe some reflective journaling in the evening. Briefly note any problems you encountered, what solutions you tried, even small ones, and what you learned. Over time, you'll start seeing patterns in what works for you, and you'll recognize your own growth.
And those mindful pauses you mentioned earlier, just taking a breath before reacting during the day.
Crucial. Just pause and ask, what's the most constructive thing I can do or say right now? Visualization can also be powerful mentally. Rehearse handling a tricky situation with calm and resourcefulness. You're building those neural pathways.
And one last piece that feels really important, celebrating the small wins. It's easy to focus only on the giant end goal and feel discouraged.
Absolutely vital. Progress rarely happens in giant leaps. It happens in tiny, incremental steps. Acknowledging and celebrating those small victories is what fuels your motivation and builds your confidence. It reinforces the belief that you can solve problems.
So maybe keep a little log of achievements, even small things, like finishing one tricky task on the project, or trying one new approach, or resolving a minor disagreement constructively.
Yes. Write them down. Reflect on how you overcame past problems. Remember that you solved things before. And reward yourself for the effort and the process, not just for hitting the final outcome. Manage to make that difficult phone call you were dreading. Great. Acknowledge it maybe with a quick walk outside, a nice cup of coffee, or just telling yourself, good job.
It really reframes the whole journey.
It does. Ultimately, thinking like a problem solver isn't a destination you suddenly arrive at. It's a lifestyle. It's a daily practice. It's about consciously shifting from complaining to creating, deliberately building your resilience muscle, and consistently celebrating those small steps forward. That's how you train your brain to naturally seek out and find solutions.
What an incredible deep dive this has turned out to be. We really journeyed through it all, didn't we? From calming that initial inner panic and reframing how we see problems,
to unleashing our own creative thinking, getting practical about breaking down big challenges, finding wisdom in surprising places like nature,
and tapping into the huge power of collaborating with others.
And the core message, really, is that the power to move forward, to find solutions, it isn't something external you need to find. It's always been within you. You have the capacity.
You're not just someone who faces problems. You're someone who can create solutions.
Exactly.
So maybe here's a final thought to leave you with. The real goal probably isn't to somehow live a life completely free of problems. That's pretty unrealistic, right?
Impossible, yeah. Probably.
Maybe the Witcher goal is to cultivate a life that's full of solutions, a life where you feel equipped and confident to navigate whatever comes your way. So consider this. What's just one problem, big or small, that you're facing right now? And which one tool or idea from our discussion today could you maybe apply to it just as an experiment?
What new possibility might that single shift unlock for you?
Stay curious. Stay resilient. Keep exploring.
Dive deep. Your problem-solving journey truly starts right now.